This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Three things that can all be true at the same time, Brock. Three things that can all be true at once. Number one, starting pitching, still the number one most important thing in baseball. And when you have it the way you have for the last six games, you're going to give yourself a lot of chances to win games. Logan was awesome yesterday. Number two, Julio is still a disaster at the plate. And I know he had a couple of hits yesterday, but some of the swings, some of what we're seeing at the plate is just not Julio-like. Number three, Julio is so unbelievably lovable, and what he did to win that game with his bat still not where he wants it to be, with his defense, with his arm, with his legs, just unbelievable. It's tremendous. It is such an incredible testament to him and the kind of athlete that he is and the number of ways in which he can affect the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, from afar, Salky, you and Mora, certainly you two. Justin's kind of probably a little more in my boat, though. He's way, way younger. But from afar, you probably always appreciated Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing. You probably always appreciated him at the home run derby, right? You probably did appreciate the superstar plays that you would see in the highlights on ESPN back in the day when that was the only place to find it, of him climbing the wall and running into the wall and all of that. But for those of us that grew up with him in the 80s and 90s here, like that, he was Julio in center field. It was the same thing. It was the arm. It was the speed. It was the athleticism. It was the, gosh, this guy's amazing at the plate. But the reason he was, what, almost the first unanimous Hall of Fame guy, missed it by, what, one vote, was because he impacted and affected the game the same way Julio does in center field. And, you know, their swings are vastly different. One hits from the right, one hits from the left. I don't know if Julio will ever be the hitter that Ken Griffey Jr. is and was and became, but my goodness gracious, out there in center field, he is becoming a gold glove dominant every night. You've just got to tune in to see what he can do. And you talked about this last year, Salk, from some of your intel, some of your time spent at the stadium, that it's not just the home runs. Like last night, the dude, you know, hit a home run in Encarnacion, hit it, what would have been a home run on a still night, and the wind and everything else, you know, Julio was able to get back to the wall. It's the line drives. And last night you saw it again. Cincinnati hit some of these balls into the gap that I am sure in their hitter-friendly ballpark in Cincinnati, get to the wall, right? get to the ground and get to the wall. And here they hang just a little bit, and they hang for our superstar to run it down and make it look easy while doing it.
Yeah, it's funny. I mentioned that at 6 o'clock this morning.
Did you?
Just because it is true. And for everyone who always says, well, how come the marine layer only affects the Mariners? Well, it affects them more often because they're here every game, and it gets in their heads in a way it probably won't for others. But you saw it affect the Reds yesterday. On probably three different balls, including the two that Julio tracked down in center field. So,
yes.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't explain Jake Fraley being an idiot. I mean, that guy's got his own problems, right? I mean, like, that guy can't keep his head on straight. Always been true, right? It's true. Jake Fraley's a mess. He is, what did I say? Quite actually, and you can think about those initials all you want, he is quite actually problematic in terms of his beliefs, thoughts, and what he's doing on a baseball field. He's made three outs on the bases two outs plus not scoring. That is terrible in two game stretch. Mm-hmm. What's going on with that guy?
Yeah,
not good.
Not good, but the Mariners will take it, and they will take the great defense, really, over the last week or so, Salky, that has paired with his pitching. No, they have played some great defense. Polanco's made some great plays. Yeah. Rojas has made some great plays. Yeah. Julio's made some great plays.
They have, but unfortunately, they've also come with Ty France kicking the ball in the ninth inning and scaring the heck out of everybody. It's come with...
Oh, I went to bed. What happened?
Yeah, exactly. It's come
with... I did the Larry Salk rule last night. Larry Salk did last night.
Oh, you missed out. No.
You didn't, Larry Salkin? What happened? What happened in the ninth?
Well, let's see. There was a ball that definitely looked like a home run off the bat that ended up being caught in left field. That was terrifying. That
Ryan Stanek walked two.
Ryan Stanek walked two. Yeah, and then there was a ground ball to first.
I did see a picture of Stanek this morning. Yeah. He had quite a dirt stain on him.
Well, yeah, he was a little late running over to cover the bag. Ty France kicked the ball. He dove to get the player, was unable to get him, and then there was a lot of little action in the ninth inning, so that wasn't a tremendous amount of fun.
Bases loaded, hit Paul Stanek.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a three-game win streak right now if Luis Castillo hadn't made an error himself. So I appreciate it.
They're not going to be perfect, but what they have done,
honestly.
There have
been some stellar plays.
There have been that outs above average plays that you don't normally make.
Right.
And that's going to help balance out some of the balls that they won't get to this year or some of the balls that they will make some mistakes on. And when you are good up the middle, man, and Julio is tracking everything down, you know this, Mariners fans, from your perspective. When you play the Kiermaiers or you play those elite center fielders and you're like, oh my gosh, can I get a break? Oh my gosh, it's just so debilitating. You know, it's morale busting, I am sure, for the other side going, what can we do? I hit that on the screws. I mean, I hit that in the gap, and I can't get anything to show for it. And then it just plays up to your elite pitching that right now has got you. Salky, one game back.
Yep.
One game back of those Rangers.
Isn't that funny?
Thanks to Benetti's Tigers beating them yesterday.
Yeah, the Rangers have really struggled. The rest of the division has really struggled, quite frankly. We were talking about it with Jeff Passan yesterday. I mean, just this division, which we still think is going to end up being a strong one, has not. Through the start of this season, the Rangers don't look good, and yeah, they're gonna get some guys back. They'll be less injured, so you want to put as much ground between you and them as possible. Mm-hmm. The Angels have played better than expected; they're likely to fade. But the Astros are sort of the big surprise. Like, you haven't played great, but they've played bad. Like, they've really struggled to start this season, and they may dig themselves enough of a hole that they can't get out of it. So, you've won just enough to keep it interesting here in April, and maybe this will be your slide. I know everyone thinks that April's been their awful month for the last few years. It really hasn't been. They've been so-so in April. The problem has been May and some of the real tank jobs that they've had in May the last couple of years. So hopefully, you know, you avoid that this year, and you're able to kind of – you know, just be in it all the way.
I've always wondered.
Turn it on late.
I've always wondered how your dad has lived so long and prosperous.
Yes.
And now I know.
Prosperous?
Like, if you just, go to bed without that kind of stress and that kind of worry that you guys all had, you know, like, nothing good's going to happen. You're either going to win it like you expected to do, or, you know, unfortunately, you're going to find a way to mess it up.
Yeah, that wasn't. Yeah. Yeah, I watched.
And if you think I Larry Salkin, I've got oceanfront property in Arizona
really?
For you.
You didn't Larry Salkin?
I can't do that. Are you kidding me? There's no chance. I don't. It truly is one of his immense gifts, one of many, because I could not ever possibly imagine doing that.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he just turns it off. Yeah, I'm going to bed. Click, click, see ya.
And in his day, he probably didn't have an iPhone, right? Where he's laying in bed looking like, oh, let me just take a quick peek.
He has an iPhone, but he doesn't know how to look at
it. I'm saying back in his day. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's got an iPhone.
The rule was invented.
Right. There's no way that he could today. I would be willing to bet if he was lying in bed, there's no way he could look up the score. Like, I would be shocked if he has an app on his phone for scores. Like, I don't know what app you use, ESPN. I use Yahoo, actually. I find that they've got a pretty good app for scores and stuff. But, like, what? I don't think my dad has an app. I'd be shocked. Shocked. Now, does he have the Seattle Sports app? That would be the real question, because that one's real easy to get. Just go download that sucker. All right, we'll come right back with everything you need to know, including another staggering number, Brock, for Caitlin Clark and Women's Hoops. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yes, the Mariners have now won themselves a series first of the year. Whew. Do it against the upstart Reds by winning the first two games. And they did it with pitching, of course. Last night, Logan Gilbert threw their sixth straight quality start, went 6 2/3 innings, allowed only one run. He was fantastic, and his manager was very happy.
With Logan's preparation, you know, spending a little time with him this offseason, seeing where he was at in spring training, he's always trying to get better. And for me, that's the epitome of what we're about. You know, you hear me talk about it all the time. It doesn't matter, just get better. And that is Logan Gilbert. He's going to find a way to continue to get better, whether it's add a new pitch, get more consistent in the strike zone, quicken up his delivery to the plate so he's not as easy to steal bases on. All the little things you need to do to be a top-end starter in this league, Logan's willing to do it. He's willing to put the time and energy in to get better, even when it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's been great, and he's really, I mean, he was phenomenal last night, and when he or any of his following relievers made a little mistake, don't worry, Julio was there to pick them right up.
The payoff pitch, swinging his clock to the gap in left center field, Julio tracking it, racing back, nearing the wall, he reaches up with a leap, and he makes the catch! Julio almost overran it! He flashes the no-fly zone, and Julio Rodriguez Rob Spencer Steer of extra bases in the gap in left center field.
Brock, do the Reds have the greatest collection of names on one team
pretty
that you've
strong.
Heard in a while?
Yeah, pretty
Spencer Steer,
strong.
Encarnacion Strand is a great name.
Buck Farmer.
They have Buck Farmer, right? Ellie De La Cruz. I mean, just their whole team is Jonathan India. What an incredible collection of names they have on that team.
They sure
Martini.
Do.
Martini.
Yeah, Nick Martini? Kidding me? Gosh.
Does Julio look like the Freeze to you? Because he does to me.
At times.
Yes, when he's just tracking it down like that. Is it in Atlanta that guy does his little race? And all of a sudden, you know, someone's running and you think you got it. And then all of a sudden the Freeze just, whoo, just flows by. It's kind of like that that way when the ball's in the alley.
It's like, I
smoke
more,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Same thoughts.
Waiting for the two of you.
They did a nice job offensively yesterday as well. Didn't score a ton of runs, but for the second game in a row, Brock, they knocked the starter out real early, took a lot of pitches, and that was really important to getting to the bullpen as well. Julio Rodriguez, as we said, was just such a huge part of this one, and his pitcher was pretty happy to have him out there.
Thank God for Julio. I mean, what he does out there, it's unbelievable. And we kind of come to expect that level of play, but I'm still somewhat surprised too, because I don't know if other people make the kind of plays that he's making.
What a nice way of saying it. We've come to expect it, and yet you're still surprised. Mm-hmm. Nice sentiment from Logan Gilbert.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
All right, Brock, week from tomorrow, the draft will finally be underway, and we'll see what the Seahawks have in store. This year, I guess, not as crucial as last year, right? Because last year you had four picks in the first two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we are going to learn this year is much more of a window into their decision-making, their plans for this new administration, how they want this to go. And I kind of put some of our thoughts from yesterday. I put my thoughts on paper last night. It's up at seattlesports.com. You can't go wrong. You have to pick Troy Faltano or Byron Murphy, or if you want a quarterback, Michael Penix. But what I want them to do is to take Jared Verst. So there you go. That's my feelings on the draft. I've now finally made my call.
I think that is well said. I think we will learn a little bit more. Like at every turn, right, we learn a little bit more. Right now, the last couple weeks, they've made players available. And we heard from a bunch of them last week. We'll hear from a few more of them today over the course of the day. And then the Seahawks, John and crew and Mike McDonald will have their final, like, pre-draft press conference. I mean, all these are little kind of tells of the direction they're going. And then ultimately, right, when they're on the clock, we'll get a real tell of, okay, how do they want to build this team? Because there is a bunch of clay out there to mold. There's some big people at the line of scrimmage. You know, there's some really talented edge players. There's obviously dynamic receivers all the way through the. I mean, there is a lot of places they could go, and it will be, to your point, a little indicator of the way Mike McDonald, John Schneider want to build this team moving forward.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the Kraken lose again, Brock. That's not a huge surprise.
They're still playing?
They are. They have one more game left to go. They lose 4-3 to Winnipeg yesterday. They can finish, depending on how they do here, with the 8th, 9th, or 10th worst record in the league, which matters for the draft lottery, which will take place here soon after the season ends. That might not have been the biggest loss of the day, though. Longtime Bruins announcer Jack Edwards is going to retire in Boston. And with that happening, rumors started to circulate yesterday that John Forslund, voice of the Kraken on Root Sports, would return to the Northeast to replace him. Forslund is a Massachusetts guy, grew up listening to Bruins games in Western Mass. He started his career calling the Hartford Whalers games, and that would just stink, man. He has been among the brightest spots for these first 3 years of this team. He's been phenomenal. He's such a pro.
Agreed. Totally agree. Co-signing all that, and then you tease some numbers, huh? More
I got
numbers
some
for
numbers. You ready? WNBA draft averaged?
Yes.
2.4 million viewers on ESPN. That is the single largest audience ever to watch anything related to the WNBA, including every game, every playoff game they've ever played. The previous high was 1.4 million who watched a Mercury Sun game on ABC in 2004.
It's incredible. Remember when I flipped over in 2020 during the COVID year and Fox flipped me over to the NFL, which was an absolute blast and super thankful for that. And I remember one of our first production calls and chatting with the big boss and the difference between, you know, some of the collegiate level of what we do versus the NFL. And you know this with the NFL shield and even the broadcast. You want to cast, as they would say, cast the widest net.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about, like, you know, teams and conferences and some of just the we're all 32 teams are in this thing together, and we want to cast the widest net possible to catch as many fans across all the ages and demographics in the country as we can every single time. And they do. And their numbers are staggering. Caitlin Clark has been able. She's been some of the impetus behind this. Now there is a net that is cast, and it's not all Caitlin, right? It's South Carolina.
Be, right? I was thinking about that because to average that for the draft, I mean, her part was done in the first 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, it's Angel Reese. It's, oh my gosh, what about Caitlin's teammate? Well, what about if, you know, I mean, it's just, it's a much, much broader and wider net, and I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon once she starts playing, either good or bad,
right?
The stories that will then come off of that. And if she is truly extraordinary in those passing skills and her range and all of those things come to life again, and Indiana's like, this is going to be, as you said, and you've said it multiple times, this is just a fresh new story,
mm-hmm.
and it is so cool to watch happen right before our eyes.
Very cool. All right, that is everything you need to know, quarter past every hour here in the Brock and Salk Show. I should mention, you shouldn't miss out on one of the best Mariner giveaways of the season. Ken Griffey Jr. home run robbery bobblehead is today, the last of the three-day giveaway for the Reds series. First 10,000 fans into the game this afternoon will score a legendary Griffey collectible, and you can score Mariners value game tickets starting at just $10 for this afternoon. Okay, let's see. We got Blue 88 coming up in a little bit. Before we do that, though, Brock, we got to go around the NFL. There are two or three stories that demand our attention, including some Harbaugh sound that is right up there with any you've ever heard. Stick around. It's coming up next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It's easy to get focused this time of year on your own team, what's going on, certainly a week before the draft. But there's all kinds of crazy stories in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh sound you have to hear. What's going on in Arizona? Oh, my gosh. Mm. I'm so excited for that sound. And then the Washington Commanders doing something that I'd never really thought of before, but I think I might love. So, Maura, without further ado, please take us around the NFL.
All right. Well, yeah, you mentioned it. The lawsuit filed by former Cardinals executive Terry McDonough against the Cardinals is through the arbitration phase right now. So information is being made public, which means McDonald's lawyer is not holding back now on his opinion of Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell.
Sure isn't.
He was on the Doug France Unplugged podcast, and this was what he had to say about Bidwell.
Is he Dan Snyder? I think he's worse than Dan Snyder. I really do. I think that what I've read and seen him do and know of him to do, he's worse than Dan Snyder. But I think what separates him from your typical bad boss is the absolute sheer arrogance. That's what it is. The belief of entitlement, the belief that because he's an NFL owner, because he inherited a team, he can do anything he wants. Somehow, some way, that seems to have been ingrained in him.
So McDonough initially filed a complaint accusing the Cardinals of unlawful retaliation in his dismissal. They then released a statement last April accusing him of domestic violence and neglecting his disabled daughter, which seemed very personal for a team to put out.
Yeah.
An NFL arbitrator found that the Cardinals did defame him with malice and awarded him $3 million. But that's what's going on now is a separate civil suit. Yikes.
Yeah. And remember, that's Sean McDonough's brother.
Yes.
Wow. Will McDonough's son.
Yeah, this gives you a little window in. If you wonder, like, all the rules are made in the NFL to, like, make everybody equal on the field, right? The scheduling, the draft process, the salary cap. It's all built in place, so everybody should be at an 8-9, 9-8 level. And then it's incumbent upon you.
Right.
Chasing edges, finding margins, doing whatever you can do to outthink and outmaneuver and outscheme. And yet there's just some organizations you look at that year after year are just dysfunctional. And this is a window into why.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading more of that, Salk. He goes into, into coordinator meetings and it's like, this is where you're going to get the ball to.
He says that he makes all the football decisions because of the time he spent playing football in high school.
2 years in D.C.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
It's really remarkable. And not a surprise. We've heard the Bidwells are lousy owners for a long time, that the dad was a lousy owner, and now that he's a lousy owner. So I'm not really surprised, but man, great stuff. And I've definitely enjoyed enjoyed the whole process of this coming out.
Well, yeah, this case isn't even finished, so we're probably going to be hearing more.
Good. That's what I like to hear. Keep it coming.
I don't know that this next one is necessarily NFL news, but I just knew that Salk would want to hear it. Jim Harbaugh did an MTV crib-style tour of the RV that he's been living in Huntington Beach for the Chargers. He mentioned in his introductory press conference there that he wanted to live in an RV by the water because he loved the show Rockford Files so much. And he talked about that again yesterday.
What is Rockford Files?
It's an old show.
Old show, yeah.
Kind of inspired by growing up watching the Rockford Files. Got my DVDs. Watch that. Throwing a little Joe Dirt every now and then. And mostly Rockford episodes. So wasn't always perfect. Good, honest guy, loyal to his friends, did a really good job. Drove a cool car, lived down on the beach, 29 Cove Road, Malibu. And kid growing up in the Midwest, that was kind of cool to watch, you know, what it was like out in California, you know, palm trees and ocean and a great theme song. I really admired him, respected him. And top three favorite TV shows of all time would have to be in a three-way tie, probably the Rockford Files, Ted Lasso, and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
So that's James Garner.
James Garner.
That's who was in the Rockford Files. I mean, James Garner's awesome, but
it made quite the impression on Jim Harbaugh.
Clearly, yeah. No kidding.
Does he see himself as next con and the private detective who was falsely convicted of a crime he didn't commit?
Probably.
Did you see what the NCAA has done to Michigan?
Falsely convicting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. The
art
parallels are
life.
Constant.
Life imitates art.
Do you want to hear a little more about what he's like most proud of in his RV life?
Yes.
Nothing will make you feel more like a dad than when you figure out how to dispose of the waste. You know, that was a moment,
was it?
Seminal moment for me.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Felt like a real dad.
Yep.
That's how I feel every time I mow the lawn.
It's a big deal, Salk. Male, female, input, output. Connecting those hoses, making sure your waste is getting flushed.
I'm sure that's very challenging.
I mean, think about how fulfilling it is to flush the toilet. Now imagine flushing a whole tank.
It's not that fulfilling. No, I've never described flushing the toilet as fulfilling.
It's pretty fulfilling.
It's just something that happens. I've never really thought about it for longer than the amount of time it takes for it to occur.
Yeah. That's a very simple process for your RV tank, as Justin will tell you. You know, it's like a septic tank cleaning almost.
With those tanks.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Well, on a houseboat and to deal with those, it was just a pain.
No, thank you.
Blackwater tanks.
I kind of love Jim Harbaugh.
When my septic tank alarm went off at 2 a.m. in the middle of a storm up there, it was awful.
Bad deal.
Woke us up. I'm always like, what is that? I'm like, I don't know. It's not the alarm. It's not a fire alarm. What is it? Go outside and it's my septic tank. And at that time, pure terror. Like, is this going to flood my backyard? It is pouring
with
buckets.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it's just an awful feeling.
Mario Brothers is the closest I've ever been to wanting to be a plumber.
Could you live in an RV, Salk? Could you and Heather, once kids graduate, could you guys drive the country for months on end?
No, obviously not. The one thing I would say is that whatever Jim Harbaugh crib-style RV thing he's got going on is 10 times more interesting than that stupid Nomad movie. That's the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that
wasn't too bad.
Nope,
it was
worst
dumb.
Movie. Literally the worst movie I've ever seen.
And Dune exists.
But I like Dune. I enjoyed Dune. It was fun.
I mean, I just saw like a preview for Nomad, and I wasn't interested. So,
Maura,
I like Nomad a lot.
Just take 2 hours of your life and delete them.
Yeah,
and
no,
you
I'm
would
good.
Do better than watching that stupid, boring, god awful movie.
No.
Well, would you be interested in watching a Bachelor style show with all of the quarterbacks in the draft and the Commanders? Because it seems like that's what they're doing.
What's going on?
They've decided to host Pretty much all the quarterbacks I think they're considering. So Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, yes, and Michael Penix to their facility for a visit yesterday and today. They have some other prospects in too, but they reportedly took them to Topgolf. So it's like they're doing some speed dating with the quarterbacks there.
Wow.
How do you think you would behave if you were one, if you were on that trip? Like, if you were one of the quarterbacks and you're clearly being judged, right? Mm-hmm. How, what would be your goal at Topgolf?
I would remind myself time and again, just be who I am. You've just got to be who you are. And that's, there's some wisdom to that. You know, I've told you my story about the combine and watching Donovan McNabb with Keely Smith and Cade McDown and me, and like you get that setting. But this is even that much more just personal. This is just hanging out. This is just like, are you a, who's the leader of the men in that group? Who's the wallflower? Who's the one that's just genuine, right? You can, I think, get a pretty decent little sense of that. Who's competitive, right? Who's the one that's.
You think this is a good way to do it then?
I kind of like it. Yeah.
I think it's a cool, yeah, I do. And I told you about the one interview process that I was in that would compare to this draft, and that was the a head high school coach at our high school. And interviewing the three candidates and then bringing them in and talking to them. And one of the more telling moments was watching them interact with the rest of the faculty, right? They did a luncheon in the football stadium and like watching them, who's the one that, and the one guy that I thought I liked was just a total wallflower. I mean, he just had no charisma with the other people. Now, he may have still been a great football coach, but what the school really needed at that point was a football coach, because it's in the fall and it's the doorstep of the rest of the sports season. Like, no, you got to be able to interact and engage with students, with faculty, with our community. And yeah, I think this is a, that's a cool little window in for the Commanders there, that I'm sure they've got the guy they want. They maybe just wanted to see how Jaden reacted with and interacted with those other guys.
So you think
as well.
They go with Jaden?
I think they do. I think a defensive-minded head coach like Dan Quinn knows the value that a Jaden Daniels brings.
There's no chance he goes with McCarthy?
There's a chance. There's certainly a chance, because he, too, has some tremendous athleticism and can run and has, you know, done it at the highest level and been a winner and elevated the people around
him.
Daniels
is just more talented, right?
Yes.
So you think it goes Caleb Williams, then Washington takes Daniels. Mm-hmm. Does New England take Drake May?
I don't know.
That's where it gets interesting.
I mean, once again, a defensive-minded guy, Jerron Mayo, looking at that situation, going, is there more upside, more stability with a guy that's been there and done it versus a Drake May that may look the part?
Or trading out of that pick?
That's right.
Realizing they got all kinds of problems up and down their roster?
This is going to be fun next
week. Yeah, it is. It's a really interesting draft. What the Seahawks do is almost secondary to it. The rest of the draft's fascinating.
Yes.
Well, taking a look at some other teams, Joel Klatt told us that Miami would be a perfect landing spot for Michael Penix.
Yes.
But Dolphins GM Chris Greer says they will focus on Tua's contract after the draft, but they are committed to him. Here's ESPN's Jeff Darlington with some more on that.
I'm going to tell you right now, because I already know, I have a feeling anyway, that this is going to be a source of contention. The Dolphins are planning to extend Tua Tagovailoa. This is no longer a matter of whether they're going to decide to pay him or not. They are planning to pay Tua Tagovailoa. They have made so clear that Chris Greer actually said in his press conference that they have absolutely no intention of drafting a quarterback with their first round pick this year. They are moving forward with Tua. Perhaps they could draft, but we need to wrap our heads around this. Tua Tagovailoa, as far as Chris Greer is concerned, is the future quarterback of the Miami Dolphins.
You know what this feels a little bit like? This feels like Wentz and Goff. And remember, both Wentz and Goff were paid by Philly and the Rams. They both got their huge second contracts. And they both survived it. They both moved on from them. Philly went on to win a Super Bowl, and so did the Rams, and trading for Matthew Stafford. So it's not like the death sentence.
Right.
In some ways that it may have been from a cap situation 20, 30 years ago. So I think that's probably some of the mindset for Miami as well. Is like, you know, this is still, we can still move things around.
If we need to.
If we need to. If this doesn't work. But it feels like, golly, Tua's ceiling has kind of been shown.
Right.
And in the AFC, with the Burrows and the Mahomes, like, you need to, you can't be a mid-floor guy. You got to be a penthouse guy. You got to be able to take us all the way to the top. And I just, from both a health, an arm, a game, I just don't, I don't see that.
You don't see it.
Tua. I don't.
No.
And I'm with Klatt. You put Penix with those dudes, with Tyreek and Waddle, and that system, a run, play action,
RPO. I mean, maybe it's all just smokescreen trying to make sure that nobody trades up ahead of them. What do you think?
I don't think so.
No? You think it's real?
I do think it's real. I think they're going to be committed to paying him. And then when you do that, you've got to continue to surround him with other pieces and your team, right? You got to make the rest of your team pretty darn elite. And that means in the draft, you got to hit and not hit on a quarterback.
Darlington also spoke about the Cowboys saying that they really can't take a quarterback early despite being in limbo with Dak Prescott's future because they have so many other things to address. CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott are in the final year of their deals, and Micah Parsons is expecting a new one as his fifth-year option next year. We'll take his salary from $3 million to $21 million. Parsons and Lamb have not been present at voluntary workouts.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that you really have to win when you have the chance.
Yes.
Right? Like, because eventually all those bills come due.
Yep, eventually the rules of the NFL.
Right,
we talked about with Bidwell.
You.
Yes. Eventually, just the way the system is built, like, yep. Kind of going up that escalator, and you better be able to win when that thing's at the top. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's going to go down, and you're going to have salary cap, you know, purgatory to deal with, and you're going to have not quite the draft capital, and yeah, everything else.
Good trip around the NFL.
Then you got to hit in the draft.
I want to hang out with Jim Harbaugh on his RV, that's for sure. I like RVs as like a thing. I don't know that I'd like want one myself. I'd like that other people have them, and that seems kind of cool. That's kind of where I'm at with RVs.
Like boats?
Yeah, I'm glad other people have them. I've hung out. Kyle has an RV and hung out in that years ago. And like Pridemore has an RV, hung out in that one. Like, that's fun. But I don't want to, like, you know, own one.
Deal with it.
Yeah, I don't want to deal with it.
Right.
No. I would consider borrowing one and maybe driving, like, you know, national parks and stuff like that. That seems like fun.
Yeah, you can do that right across America.
Like, of course.
Yeah, sure. I would kind of like that. I would be interested in maybe going to some national parks, going to Utah and seeing all that stuff in an RV. That seems like fun.
Justin, you and Betsy elope, kind of get away after, and, you know.
Well, hang on. Could you, what? Just, could we just jump through a word there?
Yeah.
Well, what?
You guys could go, if I were to rent you one of those, would you go elope, get married, and then just kind of travel the country a little bit? What
you
do you
would
think?
Rent him an RV just to get him married?
A really nice one, too. Not like just one.
I think Brock would go through a lot of trouble to get Justin to get married.
Seems like absolutely.
Seems like it.
Yeah, you and Betsy could take that sucker down to Vegas, go elope, and then, you know, go through the Siskiyous, the Redwoods, all of it.
Disturbing in a lot of different ways. Why? Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Well, we know Bill Belichick has been over at Husky practice, Brock. Yesterday, some pictures emerging of Pete Carroll hanging out there as well. What are these two guys bringing to the program?
Yeah, just so much wisdom. I've talked to you in the past with those Bill pictures and Bill looking very regal in his purple, and just the exposure, the conversation that creates for high school coaches, 7-on-7 mm-hmm. circuit for high school recruits and transfers and everything else. And that's all true. That's beneficial. But quite honestly, and Bill can put on his purple and look regal. Nobody looks good like Pete Carroll.
Sure.
Those pictures, right?
That guy just fills out whatever shirt it is. He looks
like
amazing.
Like a Hollywood actor. He looks like if you were to take we need a really handsome 70-year-old, just polished, put together dude. It's Pete Carroll. And the shot of him just watching over practice. A, I thought of that, just the aesthetics of it and how good looking a dude he is. But B, much more importantly, to answer this question, think about when he walks into that meeting room with his son, mm-hmm. the offense coordinator with Brennan. And Brennan's like, what do you think? Think of the wisdom that Pete has. Think of the 5+ decades. You know, I really like this. Or, you know, the communication was lacking there. I thought some of the tempo and some of the pacing. Like, you can hire a consultant and you couldn't pay him enough. They would never compare with all of that wisdom that a Pete and a Bill and those guys bring. Not just from an exposure and perception,
okay,
but hard and fast in those meeting rooms.
All of that being the case, do you think Pete and Bill, like, arrange their schedules to not be there at the same time like two divorced parents
Absolutely not. Nope.
You think they would want to be there at the same time?
I think, yeah. And I think they would chop it up, and I think they would talk ball, and I think they've got a relationship, Salk, and you know, you saw that when they competed against one another, a respect factor.
Yeah.
I mean, think of Bill. Bill has no respect for anybody that hadn't done anything in this league.
True.
Right? And Pete Carroll won national championships in the Super Bowl. He did it at both levels, and he was a game changer in many ways. No, I think that they would absolutely, absolutely hit it off and have a blast.
You think so?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm totally.
You don't think so?
I don't know that I'm totally convinced of that. I don't know. It's a good question. Question number two. All right, I made it very clear in my article last night, BrockSalesports.com. The Seahawks should take Troy Fautanu, unless they want to take a defensive lineman or a quarterback. Or the person that I want them to take, who's Jared Verse. Mm-hmm. Speaking of defensive linemen, Dane Brugler on yesterday with Bump and Stacy, athletic draft analyst, says Byron Murphy would be a pretty good fit.
On the defensive line, Byron Murphy's a guy that I know the Seahawks really like, and it's easy to see why. I mean, this guy is so disruptive versus both the run and against the pass. He doesn't maybe look like a first-round offensive lineman if he just, you know, if he walked into the room, because he's 6 foot. Right around 300 pounds, but he's so good at using his natural leverage to win gaps. And his hands are violent, but they're also skilled. And then the burst that he has, the natural twitch through his hips allows him to unlock a lot of power. So big fan of Byron Murphy. Good chance we see him as the first defensive tackle drafted somewhere in those top 20 picks.
Well, kudos to Dane Brugler. He's the first one that I have heard from afar not mention the name Justin Matabuike, because it feels like every time Murphy's mentioned, that name is attached to it because of the attachment to Mike McDonald in Baltimore and them being just similar, super, super twitched up guys. Now, it took Matabuike some years, and it took a contract year for him to really explode onto the scene, and then ultimately he got extended there. But that's what it's about with Byron Murphy. I mean, he's just... He's to Pete Carroll what Pete Carroll would say about Aaron Donald. Like, he's just so twitched up. That's so unique. You're not supposed to be that explosive at 6 foot, 300 pounds. Now, he's not Aaron Donald. He didn't run 4.5. But, you know, when you run 4.7, 4.8, you've got that kind of power, that kind of explosiveness. It is appealing. I'm going to profile Murphy later this week. The one thing about him is I did four Texas games the last 2 years. There wasn't one time where I walked away from that game and went, that dude wrecked the game.
Mm.
That dude took over the game.
Interesting.
I had Aaron Donald in college with Pitt. I left that stadium. I'm like, that dude's unblockable.
Game wrecker.
I don't know how you block that guy. And I don't care that he's like 5'11 and 3/4 and 280 pounds. They're not going to be able to block him at the next level. I never really felt that way about Murphy, and that's why I've always been maybe a little more tepid with him than certainly some of these national gurus have been.
All right, question number three. Well, Rome Odunze is out there getting ready for the draft, and he was asked who he thinks is wide receiver one. He was pretty clear in his answer.
Yeah, I think I'm wide receiver one in this upcoming draft. You know, that's not a knock at any of the receivers in the draft, including those two. I think they're, you know, tremendously talented, tremendously skilled, but I can play outside, I can play inside. You know, I can contest the catch, I can create separation, you know, across the field. I can block, you know what I mean? I can come out of the backfield on a route. Like, for me, the versatility and the completion of my route tree, and my receiver game as a whole is unmatched.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it sure is.
He even says that with like class and decorum.
Right?
Right? There's not like this arrogance, Bidwell arrogance or hubris. I mean, all of that, like, okay, yeah, let's go. Let's go through contested catches. Me, Malik Nabers, and Harrison Jr. Let's do it. Put up my contested catch rate. Put up my percentages. Put it up against those guys. Who's better? Right? But put up in big situations. I mean, do those guys, were they in the big situations? I was. Or did Malik Nabers get to do what Jaden Daniels did and pad his stats against horrible SEC defenses and terrible non-conference? Mm-hmm. Did I have to do it against Michigan and Texas and Oregon and elite defensive dudes? I did. And was I the focal point for them? I was. And did I win my one-on-ones? Yes. And were we 14-0 and right there in the national title game? Yes, we were. And I would say the one advantage, like if I'm, and this is probably a little purple glass bias, but I think the one advantage he has, and what I've heard from some other scouts, is I think those two have reached their ceiling. I don't think Rome has. Some think there could be another 10 or 15 pounds that he puts on. Mm. He may be a Larry Fitzgerald-esque, because remember, Larry started on the outside,
right,
transitioned to the inside, played like 20 years in the NFL. Wouldn't surprise me at all with Rome's discipline and professionalism and everything else that he starts on the outside. But to his point, I could play on the inside too and have one heck of a sustained professional career.
Pretty crazy. All right, there you go. That is today's Blue 88. Do you think that'll happen for him?
I think it could. Yeah, I think
that he would be number one. No.
Oh, no, 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 no. I think he could be the best of this class.
Got it. But no. To get drafted ahead of the other two guys?
No, if you're Michael Bidwell and you're Arizona, you're drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. Kidding me? If he's on the board.
I mean, like, obviously, Bidwell's done the scouting himself, and so he knows what he wants to do.
He's going to go into his coordinator and tell him, this is what you're going to do. I watched it on Madden. I was playing Madden the other day.
Makes sense.
You know, and when we did this in high school 35 years ago, you know, we really were able to isolate our guy very well in this situation.
Makes perfect sense. Uh-huh. All right. Coming up next, there is some news that came out yesterday about one of Justin's favorite athletes.
Not just mine.
Really, all of ours.
That's all of our
I think
favorites.
I would say. One of our all-time favorite athletes.
Just on the full court press.
Yeah.
You better believe I am.
I know, yeah. He's doing something.
Now that I turned 48, man, I got no filter.
I can tell.
Yeah, it's starting to dissipate. I watched with my old man. It's starting to dissipate about 48.
What were we saying, Saul?
Anyway, Justin's got a plan to put a whole bunch of local athletes in the same situation as this very famous one. Stick around. You'll hear it next on Brock and Saul.